Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, the podcast where we talk about anything and everything having to do with organizational health and the world of work. I'm Pat Lencioni, your host. Cody Thompson, my co-host, is out of adjectives. I'm not going to ask him how he's doing anymore because he's such a chipper guy. Tracy is always happy as well. Matt, thumbs up. So we're going to just jump right into our topic, which is what today, Cody?
Innovation is offensive.
That's right. Innovation is offensive. Well, it's actually offensive. Offensive sounds like rude, and that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about offensive.
There you go.
Versus defensive. That's right. And that's not just like some shallow euphemism, like be play offense, not defense. This is a very real and behavioral thing. It's all about our posture when we're working, and it's about innovation, which is more and more involved in every kind of work we do. In the history of work, in the history of society, I think today innovation is more important because things change so rapidly, largely due to technology. And so successful companies really are the ones that are constantly innovating. And the companies that embrace that are usually the ones that succeed, and the companies that reject that are so often the ones that fail. And we're going to talk about how to adopt a posture of innovation in a very real way. And that's what our podcast is about today.
Yeah, and I like that offensive word, not the offensive one. That's a much better word. In the sense that when we talk about this, the conversation we've had around this topic is that as human beings, it's natural for us, that bleeds into our businesses, where we like a defensive posture. We tend to sort of want to rest on what is, and in lieu of what could be. And so this is a very disruptive, innovation is a super disruptive event that happens both in our lives and in our businesses.
Yeah, and Tracy and I have been talking lately about the difference between protection and possibility. You know, protecting what we have versus searching for new possibilities and opportunities. And I do think the default position most of us take is to protect. And there's something probably, I'm sure there's something sociological about that, or anthropological. That's a big word. But I think that we are naturally inclined to protect what we have, and less than ever is that a successful strategy. We have to be constantly be thinking about the next thing.
Yeah. And the idea that you're tying this to the current business environment, you're absolutely right. Think of like how easy it was 100 years ago to make one good product and get distribution channels in all these, you know, stores or different, you know, different industries. And now it's so about these micro innovations that happen at the speed of light. Now it feels like we've even in our own methodology, Pat, I think we used to talk about thematic goals, our rallying cries, in like a 9-month increment. And like, oh boy, what do we want to accomplish? What's the most important thing over the next 9 months? Now more than ever, we're talking about it in terms of 3 months or 6 months at the max.
Right. And that is just the way it is. And and here's the thing. There's a word that goes along with this. Tracy said it before when we were preparing. She said, really what this comes, do you remember the word, Tracy?
It's discomfort.
Yeah. She said, we are so wanting to be comfortable and wanting things to be predictable. And yet it's our ability to actually be comfortable in discomfort and not knowing what's coming next and overcoming the temptation. And really comfort is, man, I'm not at all afraid. You know, there's no fear. Well, a little bit of fear is the new normal. And we have to get comfortable with that, because otherwise every time a micro discomfort comes up, we're going to back off. And that really is the recipe for failure. And the best analogy I can think of for this is skiing. You know, I'm a terrible skier. And that's because I didn't learn to ski until I was an adult. And I was already like, I don't want to blow out my knee. You know, kids are like, oh, this is a blast. And so I learned to ski the wrong way. And that's, I would lean back on my heels, because that is naturally how we protect and want to control ourselves. And anybody knows how to ski knows you have to lean forward and you have to ski downhill. You have to lean into the going downhill. And the thing is, when I lean back, I still fall, but I also fall in a way that's going to make me get injured more. Anyone who skis is going to fall. The question is, do you want to fall forward, or do you want to be so cautious that you end up getting injured. And so I like that because I know every time I ski is like, I wish I'd learned this the right way. I wish I were more risk averse, or no, less risk averse.
Yeah.
Because being more risk averse is actually a way to ensure failure.
I love that analogy as it relates to business, because it's like, you're either going to be disrupted and uncomfortable because you rested on the thing that is, or because you are intentional about innovating, and you don't actually, only one of them you get to choose. You know, if you lean downhill on your skis in your business and say, hey, we're actually going to be aggressively pursue innovation, the alternative is you rest on what is, and then you are forced to do it and you're behind the eight ball. And so the idea that you could, you know, you're going to fall either way. I love that, because you can either fall forward or you can fall leaning back.
Yeah. And you get better when you fall forward, because you go, oh, I learned something. And then you get up and you become a better skier. But when I fall leaning back, it just makes me want to lean back more and more and more, which means what I usually end up doing is I don't ski at all. I sit in the lodge and congratulate myself for not getting injured. Which is not what we want to do. Now, this is not a recipe or a suggestion for people to ski off the side of a cliff. Mm-hmm. So we're not, people tend to think that you're either really cautious or really risky. And the truth of the matter is, being prudent means you're just cautious enough, but you do take some risks. And I know we're talking about this in generalities right now. We want to talk about good stories next, but we're not saying be foolish. We're saying fall down, take risks, learn from those things within the realm of what is prudent.
You said we were going to tell them how to adopt this posture. Is there practical advice you could give to someone to adopt the posture of leaning forward? Because some personalities are, this is against their nature.
Yeah, we all have different working geniuses and personality types and backgrounds based on how we grew up, that some people are more prone to taking risks than others. And that's why we're on a team and we influence one another. The problem is when you have that person on your team that it's more open to risk or to innovation and they're pushing for change, when we're not that person, you're not like a, yay, let's just change for the sake of a change person, right?
That's right. You would say,
in our relationship, Tracy, you're more of the stability-focused person, and I'm more of the risk person.
That's right. I like predictability.
Right. And certainly there are many times when that plays well. But when we're innovating and you feel that natural temptation to want to slow things down or stop things, it's really easy for the person who's more like you to hold up your hand and say, stop. This is uncomfortable. And what happens is the innovator really gets frustrated because they feel like they're constantly being told no. And what's a better way to handle that, this is the most practical thing I think we can say, is when that person is pushing for change, think about them as a speeding car coming toward you and you want to say stop. A better thing to do is to step aside and get in the car with them and drive really fast and then ask them if you can steer a little bit, and then you can steer out of danger, but at the same time go along with them. It sounds so crazy, but when somebody says, instead of saying no, they say, yes, I love what you're doing, but can I help steer a little bit? Most innovators, most change people are like, yes, I love that you're doing this. I'm open to wherever you want to take this. Just please don't just hold up the stop sign and make me put on the brakes.
That's super practical in the sense that if you're thinking about a team meeting or a conversation at your work, I think the natural human behavior is to say, oh, we fear the unknown more than we fear what is already in existence. So anytime innovation comes up, even if you're more inclined to wanting to try new things, more often than not in the workplace, it feels like the posture is, hey, let's not talk about that right now. We have to operate our business. We have to take care of the things that are already existing versus the things that aren't. And I think that's when you think of it in terms of like oxygen and resources, so much is of our people, human capital, and our resources are put into what already exists that we tend to stave off any idea of like, let's change that. Or we don't give energy, oxygen, or even thought to something that could bring something new into the equation. So even someone who's not Tracy, I think in businesses very often, that's the common posture is, hey, let's just make our ship run the right way as it is without thinking, should we build a new ship or is there something more innovative or different we should be doing?
Yeah. You know, I want to use a personal example from our company and a very macro and super micro example. Let's start with the macro. When we started this company, Tracy and I worked at another company, and us and the other people who founded it, we all had jobs and benefits, and we were doing pretty well. And when we decided to start this company, The Table Group, this was 25 years ago, almost exactly. There was no organizational health firms like ours. It wasn't really a field. There was a few consultants doing stuff like that. But we said, no, let's start a firm that does this. And it was really scary. We were uncomfortable. And Tracy and I can still remember sitting there in the different apartments we met at to try to plan this company and getting that pit in our stomach like, oh, this doesn't feel easy. This doesn't feel prudent.
Yeah.
There's no guarantee that this is going to work, right? So we remember mm-hmm. that well. And then a year later, it's working. And you know something, I'm sure at that point that we were thinking, okay, let's not go through that again. Let's mm-hmm. protect what's working and just keep it this way. And mm-hmm. throughout our history, we've had so many moments and some of them come every week. Some of them came like every few years where we had to innovate. And every single time it was scary. Not once did we go, wow, this will be fun. We could fail.
Well, actually, I love that story. I would ask Tracy, and I want to do this live, like, so you are someone who naturally is more risk averse. What yep. was it at that time that caused you to even say yes? Like, as people are listening to this, like, oh, I'm not as inclined to that risk or mm-hmm. that innovation. What was it about Pat? Like, what made you follow this crazy guy out into the world and away from your benefits?
Well, I think for me now in retrospect, it's really easy to answer because I think it was my ability to discern the idea. Like I knew there was something special in what we were saying. So I followed that intuition that I had. We had this methodology. We had Pat as this charismatic sort of leader that had this vision. So I was able to discern that. Now that feeling was dreadful. It was right. really scary because like Pat said, there was so much security and predictability of my job. But yeah, I saw the potential there, but it was scary. You never get used to that feeling. For the past 25 years, I've never gotten used to it.
Yeah. And exactly. But we've come to trust ourselves in the midst of it. We just have to go through this.
Yes.
You know, but it's interesting because you look back and I've almost forgotten the bad feelings because it's like in the Bible where it says the woman that has a baby and it's so painful to go through birth. And then the baby's placed in her arms and she's like, this is the best thing ever. And they're willing to go through it again.
Yeah.
You know, and you almost forget it. And then the next time it's coming through, you're like, oh, this is no woman goes, oh, I'm having a baby. This is a piece of cake.
Yeah. Right. Right.
But it's worth it on the other end. But if we stop trusting that we have to go through that discomfort, we don't get to the other side. And every time, and we've innovated more over the last 2 years than we have in the first 23, it was still scary, uncomfortable, and mm-hmm. tempting to say no.
And I think it's worth saying and sort of diving into this relationship. So we don't always talk about Working Genius on the At the Table podcast, but what you're describing, Tracy, is actually one of the ways that we keep innovation from going off of the cliff in that ski analogy, which is Pat, mm-hmm. who has invention. Well, let me do a quick plug. If you don't know what Working Genius is, the book is coming out at the end of September on 9/27, and we are doing an actual book launch event around that where Pat, you're going to be speaking live to this audience. We're capturing that video and then we're going to roll it into some questions and insights and, you know, behind the scenes stuff around the book. So if you are interested in Working Genius, learning more about it, go in workinggenius.com. There's a little pop-up right there that says sign up for our launch event. It's free. We'd love to have you there. And now once you do that, I can tell you about how Working Genius
evolves you slipped into that this commercial in there nicely, Cody. Yeah, we do yeah, have people join us. It'll be fun.
But I do think, so we talk about in Working Genius, there's this loop between what's called invention and discernment. And Pat, you are an inventor. And in on many teams, we're finding that invention, a person that has the genius of invention, is that person driving that car fast sometimes? Like new ideas, micro innovations or macro innovations or things that don't even have to do with core business are coming from someone who loves to create something out of nothing and doesn't really love the status quo. But then you need someone like Tracy with the genius of discernment to say, that's actually a great idea. We can tweak it and evaluate it and really change it to make it better and higher degree of success. And I think that's when you say, when you used her as the analogy to steer the car a bit, that's what she's doing. And that's exactly how that those two geniuses play together around invention or innovation. Right.
And I think back, I probably did some galvanizing too. And so it all plays together into all of that. So it's that loop between the inventor and the discerner is really important how this works. Oh, here's the micro example I want to use. This podcast today. So there's two ways to do a podcast. One is, and we've done a few, you don't prepare at all. And I'm more inclined to that. But Tracy never lets me, everybody, so just know that. But we've tried a couple, and that's not ideal. But on the other end is to over-prepare. And I actually think today we prepared a little too much. Like, I think that we, like, and it was my fault because I went to the whiteboard and I wrote out all this stuff and it was very comfortable to start it. But I know our very best podcasts are when we do the thing in the middle where we do enough planning, but then we leave it open to follow our nose. And I really do think the best ones come from that. And so even in the micro way, like we want to make every one of these podcasts pretty innovative. And if I'm over committed to eliminating any doubt about what we're doing, it can kind of lose some of its magic. And so there's a micro example of just today where I chose to be comfortable and a little too much comfort. And that sometimes prohibits ourselves to be a little bit more inventive, if you will.
Yeah, I even thought, Pat, I thought you were going to use the example where right before we turned the podcast on, we said, hey, do we need to change the opening? And it's very easy. I mean, we're on episode 143. We could have just gone right through with the normal intro. And then you ask me how I'm doing and I say, great. And we thought, boy, I think we could just get into this a little faster. And I think our listeners would appreciate that. So we did a little micro innovation right there without being too cautious.
We did. The content was just a little too planned out.
Right.
So we always got to find that way. The key is this, if there's not any discomfort going on, you're probably not innovating. And if you're to the point where you really want comfort over discomfort in those moments, realize that it's going to lead to some longer term discomfort when you're not constantly open to change. Cody, we wanted to talk about a few examples from the world of business and sports about organizations and people that innovated and leaned into discomfort and why it actually served them, right?
Yeah, we always try to work sports in here because Tracy shut down our sports podcast. But, you know, we had talked about, you know, how this plays out in sports really regularly, including everything from basketball where there used to not be a shot clock and there used to not be a three-point line. And there's so often, and every time there is this whispers of innovation in an industry like the sports industry, there's so much pushback because people are so intensely focused on the history and what is that they're so afraid that it might ruin the product for the future. But more often than not, I mean, there's some bad innovations too that they have corrected from, but the implementation of a shot clock and making the game faster and more interesting or a 3-point line there, I think what it does is it illustrates our human beings' natural tendency to say, wait, I just want to keep things the way they are, even at the expense of making something better. And that's really at the heart of what this episode is about.
Cody, I will date myself here and say that when I was the starting point guard on my basketball team in high school, and there was no 3-point line or shot clock. And it is so much better of a game. Not to mention the fact that most of my shots came from beyond what would have been the 3-point line. So I would have gotten 50% more points, but it was so easy to go, but the purity of the game. And it's like, it's a game. It's supposed to be interesting and fun. And there was a moment where somebody said, well, we're going to get criticism. This is kind of uncomfortable. It might not work. We got to be uncomfortable. You know,
yep.
Golf is going through this right now. Golf, the most conservative in terms of like the rules and all those things, which I love some of that, but they're innovating right now. There's this new thing called the Live Golf Tour. And, you know, I remember at the beginning when they had launched that, I thought, oh, that's kind of a bummer. But there's a lot of fun that's coming out of that, right?
Yeah, I think this is a great example of what we talked about earlier. If you don't innovate in your business, somebody else will. And it will cause you, force you to make, you'll be behind the eight ball, and it'll force you to make decisions that you weren't you're making from the back of your skis instead of the front. And so it was so interesting. It basically, think of it this way, a bunch of people sat around and said, hey, golf is kind of slow, and it's, yeah, I know there's a lot of tradition, but how do we make it faster and more interesting? And so people put together this idea that, hey, instead of having golfers all start on the same hole at different tee times, where you have to wait until, you know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon to see the people who are on the lead, let's have them all start. There's 18 holes. They're all starting. It's called a shotgun start. And so right away, from the moment the, you know, the pistol goes off, there's shots happening, and you're watching dozens and dozens of golfers right away, as opposed to waiting until the whole field is out there after everyone starts on hole number one. And then on top of that, they said, like, some of the most fun events that we watch throughout the year on golf are team events. Why don't we formalize more teams in golf, and rather than it always be individual? So it's both individual and team. So they're just doing this,
yeah,
trying to make the product more entertaining. I mean, that's what golf is. It's supposed to be entertaining. And so now it's forcing the PGA, the sort of more traditional conservative, to say, how do we innovate and change so that we don't lose market share or our golfers or even our viewers, the most important thing, to this other business?
Yeah, it's interesting. I forgot about the team thing. You can watch the entire thing in under 3 hours too, which is nice. Because, yeah, you know, in the past, it was like, if you were a golf fanatic, it's like 7 hours of golf. By the time the guys got up that were the leaders, you were already kind of burnt out, you know? And the team thing is fun. The graphics they put up are fun. It's just a whole different thing. Now, the question is, 5 years from now, when it's time to keep innovating, it'll be interesting. Will the LIV Golf Tour keep innovating, or will somebody else come along and do that? You know, mm-hmm. Will they lean into when they're the big deal, will they lean into the discomfort of doing it again? The NFL is another one that they preseason games go before the season. And I hate that. It takes forever. Nobody cares. They charge a lot for tickets. So they said, we're going to cut out only going to have three preseason games and add another game to the regular season, 17 games. Now, if you're a fan of sports, that's awesome. And it doesn't make the season longer. It just makes the games count more. And yet there's always reasons like, well, if we do that, what about this? Let's just keep it the same. But, you know, sports that don't change anything really kind of get boring. And mm-hmm. So it's an interesting thing. In the world of every business, it's easy to talk about Apple computers or somebody that's in the innovation business, but every business, whether you're doing something that seems relatively staid or relatively simple, it involves constantly changing it up. And if your business has been around for the last 5 years, you know that you've had to innovate more than ever. And that means you're going to be more uncomfortable. And I think getting used to discomfort is probably the key message here.
Yep. And you've obviously trained or gotten Tracy to a better place, because I just brought a new idea to her the other day and she didn't shut it down. So we'll see where that goes. But she is definitely jumping in the car and steering us to safety here.
Well, that is my favorite thing to do. As long as you're not dragging me down into the implementation zone, I love to play in that ID loop. I think it's a blast.
Very good. Well, we'll keep doing that. And we're going to keep innovating around this podcast. One thing I'm committed to is continuing to keep them short. And this one went a little longer, but that's okay if we have stuff to say. But we're going to make the intro shorter. We're going to make the podcast continue to make them short. And we're going to find new ways to do things that make you, the listener, more engaged, learning more, and applying more in your life. So thanks for joining us on At the Table. We'll talk to you next time. God bless.